Welcome, boys and girls, to the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. This is an audio-only podcast. If you're thinking, why is my screen black? It's because there's no video component to the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe.
What?
My name... Yeah, it's true. It's true. My name is Mike Quackenbush. The other voice that you will hear on this audio-exclusive podcast is that of Clayton Morris.
Hey, my friend. How are you?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm about to be better because I'm about to pour right in front of this microphone some delicious coffee I just made in a little French press. See if you can hear this.
Well, if you haven't had it yet, you don't know if it's delicious, do you? It sounds like a commercial. Or that you're going to the bathroom.
Right. No, it's not coffee. I just urinated on the microphone.
Right. Yeah, we use only the least expensive microphone, so it's okay to burn through a few.
And the least expensive beans for that urine when we urinate on. I don't want to waste good beans for urinating on microphones.
Oh, I was going to say, I don't make urine beans at all. They sound terrible.
Have you seen that poop coffee?
They make it from like bat dung or whatever?
No, it's from cats. In Indonesia, they feed them like the beans, and they eat the beans, and they crap them out. I think it's the world's most expensive coffee.
Yes, I remember hearing a story about this, and I was in disbelief of it then as I am now.
Yeah. Apparently, the cat's bowels strip the acidity from the beans somehow, or I don't know. But anyway,
I don't know much about cat's bowels at all, to be honest.
We're gonna have to look more into that. I'm going to go to Wikipedia right now and look up cat's bowels.
Yeah. That's where the best medical information can be found.
On Wikipedia. So how was your Thanksgiving holiday?
You know, these long weekends, which Thanksgiving creates, because, you know, people obviously get – we here in America anyway, we get that Thursday off, the Thursday of Thanksgiving. And then most people get that Friday off too, which creates a very long weekend, which there was an age when that was something to look forward to. Right, like I didn't have to go to school or whatever, but now that's just like a day where work doesn't get done. And by that, I'm alluding like anything really that means for any reason the bank can't be open. Like, oh, we're observing the Thanksgiving holiday. We should have observed it on Thursday. You know?
No, observe it on a Saturday,
right?
Or like, a Sunday.
Any of those days. So
these elongated
weekends. I don't know. They're rough.
For me, you know, I don't get off on the holidays anymore. So I don't actually really look – I mean I look forward to the – what do you call it? The I don't know, the ambiance.
The ritual.
The ritual of it, the ambiance of the holiday, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had the whole family here and everything. So I look forward to that. But I don't get off. You know, the way other people are like, oh, it's going to be like a five-day weekend for me. You know, I'm off on Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, right. Sunday, and I get to spend it with family and just eat and relax. And then that's what all my relatives were saying while they were here, you know. And I'm like, oh.
They were taunting you.
Right. And I had just gotten home from work, you know, having to work that early in the morning. So, yeah, I recall some – and I have some fond memories of Thanksgivings gone by, you know.
No fond memories of the recent one, but of the ones gone by, yes.
Mm-hmm. It wasn't bad, though. I mean, now I remember going out. When did it happen for us? I think because, you know, you used to play football with us. We'd go out like on Thanksgiving Day. We'd go up to the park. We'd play football together. And, you know, you'd be out all day. When did it switch so that – and I know not for you. You're not a big football fan. But when did it switch for us where – instead of like waking up early, having a big breakfast, and then going out all day with your friends to play football, and then coming home and having Thanksgiving dinner, now you wake up and you sit in your pajamas all day, and your only goal is to not get out of pajamas and sit in front of the television and watch football all day and eat. And then, because you're already in pajamas, you just go back to bed.
Mm-hmm.
You don't leave to play football anymore. At what point was where was this switch made?
Well, I guess after high school. I do fondly recall that, you know, you'd like come home covered in mud from playing football all day and that sort of thing. And, yeah, you know, sort of to me, college kind of represented the death of, like, my group of friends, you know. After I went to college, and there were very few people that I kept in regular contact with. And, like, my group of friends really shrank to, like, to you. And like, you know, and one or two other guys. Like, in high school, I had like 30 friends. Then I went to college, I had like two. And now I'm grown up, I have like one. You know,
it's like very difficult to organize a football game with one friend.
Right. And like, we don't live near each other anymore. You know, you're in New York, I'm in Pennsylvania.
We're older, we're battered. You know, I mean, if we were to go out,
I can't even
football,
imagine the way we used to play. I mean, we used to wreck each other.
Oh my God, we'd like, come home, yeah, muddy and broken and beat up, and some of us would have a bloody lip, and you know, you'd have bruises all over your body. I still have a finger injury. My middle finger on my left hand got like jammed really hard, and it was black and blue. I felt like it was black and blue, and inoperable for about 3 years. You know, like it just always got painful. It got sore, and it lasted. That pain and that weird, odd shape of my middle knuckle, or my middle finger's middle knuckle, lasted years. But if you and I were to do that today, we'd be broken.
Right. Yeah. You just have to line up ambulances on the sidelines to cart us away. Like I could not take the kind of hits that I used to. You know, you're just not as resilient as you were in your high school days. Speaking of bloody encounters, I had one this morning, incidentally. And this is this goes to a recurring theme of recent grizzes. You know, I shave with a disposable razor. And for whatever reason today, I just hit the curve right under my nose a little bit wrong, and I took a chunk of skin with me. And it's right like at the bottom of my nostril. So if it might have the – this is what I don't like about it, because I have to occasionally go outside and interact with people.
Right.
It's in just such a – now, it's dry right now. It took forever for it to stop bleeding. It's dry right now. But I know, like, if I were to wipe away that little red scab that's starting to form there or whatever, you know, the coagulated blood, I suppose, it would start to bleed all over again.
Right.
So I must leave it. But it has the appearance that there's, like, a little red something hanging out of my nose. And I don't want that.
You know,
I don't want to be out, and people are like, oh, that guy doesn't know he has, like, a bloody red booger hanging out of his nose. No, I know it's there.
Do you want to borrow some of my wife's makeup? I could send you some of that.
Is that for just such an eventuality? That
yeah.
You have a bloody shaving accident? So, yeah, so I have to, like, do I want to be that guy that's, like, dabbing his face all day with a tissue because I don't want to – or am I just going to walk around and people be like, I think that guy's got something hanging out of his nose.
I hate those things. And see, now, the disposable razor that you're using, is it like the disposable bags that you buy, like where it's one razor all attached, you don't have to manipulate the head of it and you throw it away after a few days? Or is it like a replaceable Mach 3 razor disposable?
No, you throw the whole thing away. And I think you're really supposed to throw these away like every week. But, you know, like I can usually get 3 or 4 weeks out of these. They just get really dull, Clayton.
Right.
That's all. You know?
No wonder you're taking chunks of skin with you.
Yeah.
Maybe this is an opportunity for Santa to bring you a straight razor and to walk down the straight razor wet shave path.
Well, let me say this. Getting around the curve of my nose with one of these smaller disposables is one thing. With a straight razor, like, that really makes me nervous.
I think you might have more precision with a straight razor.
I might have more blood. I might have more blood.
I saw James Bond this week.
Oh, you did? Where did you run into him?
At the movie theater.
Oh.
He had some...
You always
had some,
run into him there.
He had some Reese's Pieces. I had some popcorn. We shared. Our
close
hands
to $27.50.
Right. Our hands met in a bucket of popcorn. Which, before we get to the movie, and the reason I bring this up, well, I'll get to it right now. Because there's a scene in the movie, and it's not giving anything away, but it speaks to his old-fashioned nature. And there's this metaphor that runs through the movie about him being old-fashioned and how, you know, he's just, he can't keep up with the times, right? The times that are changing. He's an old-school agent, you know. He's from MI6's past. And the way that he and M do things are old school, and he's old-fashioned. Well, there's a scene where, of course, a Bond girl walks in, and he's, you know, wrapped a towel around his waist, and he's in the mirror, and he's taking some delicate time, and he whips out his straight razor and begins to shave. And I said, that's my man. I knew I was on to something. And he's one cool cat, right? You cannot be cooler than James Bond. And I don't think you can be cooler than Daniel Craig as James Bond. So I think I'm on to something with the wet shave. And she says, ooh, that's a, you know, that's a scary, the Bond girl says something to that effect, like, ooh, you're, you know, that's, you got to be really careful with that. You know, and he says, you know, I prefer things done the old fashioned way, you know, and he's like, it just takes, you just got to be a little bit more, you know, delicate and precise. And And he says, you'll never get a better shave with one of those other, you know, disposable. He makes some comment about disposable razors. And I thought, how weird.
Right.
You know, there's this whole
scene.
Weird
product placement going on right there.
And it wasn't even a product that you could buy. Like, it was a random old blade. Like, it didn't have a name on it. You know, you couldn't go to Amazon and find the blade that James Bond was using. It was like something
well,
out of
give it a few days, Clayton.
I'm going to make it. I'm going to fashion it out of – I'm going to get a blacksmith over here. Mm-hmm. I'm going to make a James Bond blade in my backyard. Mm-hmm. I just thought how bizarre that given all the talk recently that you and I have had about the wet shave on the show, that James Bond had a whole scene devoted to it right up my
that
alley.
That is quite odd.
Yeah. So you can get one of those – have you had one of those septic pencils you can put on a bloody spot like that?
A what?
A septic pencil. When I was growing up, my parents, when I first started shaving, they bought me a little septic pen. And it's like it's a little thing that you tap on like a cut like that, and immediately it like coagulates it and prevents you from having to worry about keeping this giant scab on your face. Mm-hmm. It's just like a little pencil you get at any drugstore.
Is that right?
It's like obviously not a pencil, but it has like a tip on the end of it that's got some sort of medicine on it that you just rub on there, and it kind of coagulates it, and you're good to go.
Interesting.
Yeah, because early days of shaving. Remember those early days of shaving? Boy, I was cutting my face left and right.
Yes, those were brutal times. You were not a fan of shaving to begin with, but maybe all these new accoutrements that you intend to acquire around Christmas will bring to you a renewed interest
shaving. Because I get in and get out of the bathroom so fast, right? And I feel like maybe that's a little – now the kids run around the house. It's a little quiet time I could have to myself in there, put on some music on my iPad – just
read a few newspapers from start to finish.
Read a few magazines, a book, a novel, and do a nice little wet shave and enjoy some time in there.
You know, and you probably could power through all of that if only there was like an app to help you read things more quickly. You know what I mean? Like if you had like something where like you could speed up the rate at which the words were delivered to your frontal cortex, you could probably power through all that while you're, you know, dabbing cream with a horsehair or an oxen tail brush.
Are you talking about the incredible iPad app called Read Quick?
Is that what I'm talking about?
You are indeed. Read Quick, actually, Mike mentions that this is an app that I've been working on for quite a while. Mm-hmm.
A heck of a coder.
If you are into speed reading and you want to be able to read your Instapaper feed or your pocket feed of any articles that you've saved and you want to read it quickly on your iPad, it even works great on the iPad mini. It's $3.99 in the App Store. A lot of hard work. Over a year of work went into this. So just go download it. Be a friend. If you're a friend of the show, be a friend to me and check it out. It'll enable you to speed read. And you can save any article offline. Maybe you got those 20-minute articles that you have, you know, like a New Yorker piece that you've been meaning to read, but you just don't. You can read it in 4 minutes instead of 20 minutes. You can set your reading rate. It's a lot of fun. So that's how I get through a lot of my workload for having to read tons and tons of articles.
Hmm. Yes, that's right. You heard it here first. Clayton does read. I, on the other hand, I watch television. Not a lot of it.
But
when I'm hanging out with a 3-year-old, we do watch some TV. We do. And I came across this. I watched an episode of Scooby-Doo, and there is a new Scooby-Doo. I don't know how aware of this you might be. Like within the last 3 years.
Not at all.
It's called Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated. And on this episode that I was watching, I was stunned to find out that Daphne is no longer on the team. Did you know this? They replaced her.
With like a hotter version?
No. She's replaced with what seems to be another Velma, and her name is Hot Dog Water. And
what?
I thought, something's not right here. Well, then I looked it up, and she is. That's a real thing. Hot Dog Water replaces Daphne on the team for a while.
That's her name is Hot Dog
Hot
Water?
Hot Dog Water, yes.
Why would they give her that name?
They kept saying that, and I just thought, that can't be that character's name, right? Like, I'm going to Wikipedia. I'm going to find out right now. Let's look up Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated here. And yes, there is a part in this new series where Daphne goes on hiatus, I guess. She wants to be apart from the team, and she's replaced by Hot Dog Water, who really is, like, just another Velma.
What's the point? Just that someone's having a go at us? You know, that we're going to give her that name. And I'm looking at the picture of the team, right? You got Scooby-Doo, you got Shaggy. What's the guy with the ascot?
Fred.
And Thelma. And then you've got the girl who I would have said in this picture is Daphne. I don't understand.
Yeah. You know, it's Velma with a V.
Velma. Yeah. That's right.
Yeah. In fact, I think because so many people, including me, used to think it was Thelma, in the new series, they call her V.
Huh.
To kind of get that across. And now I don't believe this is a permanent adjustment, but it was very jarring for me, having not watched any Scooby-Doo in quite a number of years, that Daphne was missing and had been replaced with hot dog water. So I found that very strange. Some other things about this new series, too. I don't know if how curious you might be about Scooby-Doo. You know, that's a really long-running franchise. I think Scooby-Doo started at the end of the 1960s. It started on television. So it's been around forever.
It had been named the Kids' Choice Awards Favorite Cartoon in 2011 and 2012.
Hmm.
Was it any good other than the weird named characters?
I mean, it's worlds better than the old school stuff that we remember from the early days of Hanna-Barbera and stuff. But one, there's a lot more like wink-wink stuff to grown-ups in it, which is definitely not true of the older stuff. And there's a lot more about like their interpersonal relationships. Like, it's clear that they're inferencing that Fred and Daphne broke up, and that's why she left the group, and this hot dog water is in the group. And they kind of tease, like, there might even be some kind of, like, lesbian thing between her and Velma. Like, they're really way too chummy. And then you get the feeling that Shaggy's jealous, like he's got something going on for Velma. And there never used to be any of that type of material.
Hmm.
So that was really strange. Like, it almost seemed like it was more about their relationships than it was about the monster of the week type solve the mystery thing, although that was apparent in this episode as well. There seemed to be like a subplot going on with like a rival mystery solving group, and their leader is voiced by Lewis Black.
Now, at the end of every episode, comedian Lewis Black, of course, at the end of every episode, do they do, well, we would have got away if it wasn't for those pesky kids?
Yes, that's apparently, as I discovered after looking it up online, there's a line like that in every episode of the new series, but it always has like a little, you know, extra razzle-dazzle put onto it.
Hmm.
So it was very strange to watch. But as I was watching, this is what I'm arriving at here in a roundabout way. I then also, you know, was suffering through commercials, television commercials, which were unavoidable. Unless I had a TiVo, I guess. And there were these recurring commercials. Of course, this is a children's channel that we were watching this on. They had recurring commercials for personalized gifts. And what they would show in the commercial was like a teddy bear wearing a shirt where your child's name was, like, embroidered on the shirt, you know? So it was like this kid holds up this teddy bear and it says Oliver, you know, embroidered on the bear's sweater. And in the commercial, you know, the promotional copy that some narrator has to read for this, he's like, you know, nothing delights children more than a personalized gift. And on our website, you can choose from over 1,300 different gifts to personalize with your child's name. And as they were saying this, all I could, I am not so far detached from my own childhood that I can't recall this. Those kind of gifts are the worst gifts. Those are the ones you do not want as a kid.
The personalized T-shirt gift.
Mm-hmm.
Or and they would always peel off too. If you're getting one of those shirts from the 80s, remember that had like puffy,
those are the best.
Puffy sticker style, where they, you know, you would, I don't know, they would go into some sort of hot oven,
or some sort of
press oven thing that would, you know,
right, it was an iron on,
right? And oh yeah, the iron ons, yeah, and you could even get some of those iron ons in cereal boxes. Do you recall those?
Right. Oh yeah,
that you would get, and you'd have your mom like stick them on a blank white T-shirt. You thought you were the coolest thing in the world, and then until the first washing.
Yep, then game over.
Well, yeah, where one of the corners would peel off of the O, and you know, the whole thing would just fall off, and you'd be, you know, you would be missing a letter of your favorite word or something. I don't know, or it was like some sort of cartoon character iron on, and it would never work.
No, I got one of those at the beach, which after two washings just read Ninge.
It's good you didn't lose some other letters in there.
Mm.
Do you remember? And I was thinking some of the other toys, you know, because as you point out, some of the toys that kids are now clamoring for, right? There's like the follow up to the Tickle Me Elmo.
Mm-hmm.
Now the new Elmo is out. I don't know what it is, but that's the new one. It does all sorts of stuff. Then
that's embattled litigation Elmo, right?
Right, right. I was going to say that was underage Elmo. If you saw But there's some other ones out there that kids are apparently clamoring for that I can't even imagine, you know, us having access to when we were kids. I mean, they're so far removed. And we were excited about, I wanted like He-Man's Castle Grayskull. That was a major gift that I wanted in at that time. I was thinking about, so some of the early stuff that I really wanted was like Rinky Dinks, right?
Do you mean Shrinky Dinks?
Oh, Shrinky Dinks, yeah. Or no, I liked Rinky, aren't Rinky Dinks the ones where you, no, Tiddlywinks. I liked Tiddlywinks and Shrinky Dinks.
Tiddlywinks is a game, and Shrinky Dinks are those things you put in the oven, and they just turned into tiny hard pieces of plastic that you'd colored.
Right, what was the point of those? I liked them, though. I don't know what it was
right,
about.
It was like someone discovered that. You know, if we put this plastic in the oven, it just shrinks like that.
Because I had the Mr. T set. Do you remember this? The Mr. T activity Shrinky Dink set?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, you would color them, the big, you know, you color your own Mr. T collectibles, then you color them out, you cut them out of the plastic, and then they'd shrink up, I think like they said, like magic, and you could watch them. I think they were by the Color Forms company.
Yeah, you might be right about that.
Because I remember that logo so distinctly. And you would, after they popped out of the oven, they were these, they weren't like flat. They'd always be like curled up.
Right.
Pieces of plastic.
The edges were curled. It came out like a potato chip. Like it wasn't even.
Right. And what was the point?
Right. Well, I think
they looked better before you baked them. Right?
Well, you could, I think the idea was like maybe you'd use one as a keychain. Like you could punch a hole in it before you baked it. And then the hole would be there when it hardened into this thing, and you could use that as a keychain, or you could. That's so annoying.
Sorry, I had to urinate again.
Well, let me say this though. I'm not 100% certain what Shrinky Dinks were for, but you know those haven't existed in a really long time.
Yeah.
So I think the shelf life or the novelty appeal of Shrinky Dinks and Color Forms were great too. Like what a simple toy that was. It wasn't even a toy. I mean, that's like giving it too much credit. You know, you had these whatever the heck they were. Like, what was it? Static Cling that made them stick?
I guess. What are Color Forms? I'm trying to recall. Exactly.
Well, the Color Forms, like, you came in a box, and the box was kind of like a landscape, you know? It might be like Castle Grayskull and then, like, some hills. And then you'd have these little plastic pieces, thin, really thin, floppy plastic pieces of, like, He-Man and Skeletor or whomever, and you'd lay it on there, and they'd stick. But then you could peel them right off and reposition them.
Right.
But it was a real... I mean, certainly in this day and age, when you consider, like, the level of interactivity, like... This was like nothing, you know, like you just laid these sticky things on the, and now I'll move them, I'll change them, reverse the positions, like, but I loved Color Forms. I had those. And then they also had, I think Color Forms might have also been behind this. This would be interesting to find out. Do you remember Presto Magics?
Yes. Presto, give me a second. Presto Magics.
So it's the same concept. You have this landscape, you know, open, you know, kind of scene. And then you had this sheet of, like, you know, they were all on plastic. And you'd hold the character where you wanted him to go on the landscape. And, like, you'd scribble over top of him with your pencil.
Oh, I love those.
He would transfer off the sheet onto the landscape wherever you wanted him to go. Now, those were permanent. Once you did the Presto Magics, you couldn't move him again like you could the Color Forms. But
I love Presto Magics.
To me, what that recalls, not so much a holiday, but like when we would go on family vacations, that was like the activity in the car. Was like we had a set number of Presto Magics that would be rationed out by my mother throughout the trip. You know, once we hit like, we're 100 miles into the trip, you get another Presto Magics. And I remember I had one that was Return of the Jedi, and I had one that was He-Man. And
absolutely. I totally remember those. I loved the Presto Magics. One of the toys that I couldn't stand, though, and I thought was a waste... is an absolute waste, or like the instant prehistoric animals, where you'd have like the tablets, they're like drop capsules.
Yeah.
You drop them in warm water, and it was, you know, it was like a sponge. So the capsule would dissolve, and then suddenly, you know, instantly you'd have this yellow dinosaur that would emerge out of the primordial ooze of the sponge that you dropped in the water. Those were worthless.
Yeah.
Because once that was done, I didn't care. Like, I didn't want to play with a sponge dinosaur.
Right.
Now, if it was a Transformer, if it was one of the Dinobots that came out of a sponge that you dropped in the water, that'd be a different story altogether.
That would be something. Yeah, I had those as well. Those were not very good. I don't know if you saw this in our Twitter feed, actually, but one of the Egghead Army and longtime friend of the show, Kevin Adams, who you may know as a percussionist, he dropped us a tweet asking about StarCom.
StarCom?
Which, of course, yes, he was asking if we recall that. Of course. In fact, I still have three of my StarComs, which I have sort of bequeathed to my son. They were like, you know, they were right around the same time as Sky Commanders. They were small. They were magnetic. That's what operated them. Like, each of the characters had magnets in his boots, and there were, like, magnets on the vehicle.
Right, StarCom, so, like, USA, the Space Force.
Yes, that's it.
Yeah.
And, you know, the vehicles would sort of automatically transform, but it was all done with magnets. Like, it was all magnetic. And they were small, they were inexpensive, which is why I remember collecting them. Like, you could get the vehicles for $2 or $3 because they were very, very tiny. I think they were made by Kenner, if I'm not mistaken. But also, along these lines of nostalgic toy type things, I know I've talked about this not any time recently, but during I don't know how – help me out with this timeline here. When do you remember was like the big resurgence of the 80s properties like – back into comic bookdom, like when Transformers came back and G.I. Joe came back, Thundercats, like, was that 8 years ago?
Yeah, I feel like it was either late 90s or early 2000s.
Yeah, like it was definitely like, I don't think it was any sooner than the first Spider-Man movie in 02. But, you know, there's a big resurgence in 80s properties, right? Like that 15 to 20 year nostalgic buffer had passed, and it was time for those things to be cool again. And when that was happening, I'm not unique to this. I happen to know other people were pursuing this as well. I had written a script for a comic book series about my favorite 80s toy property, Mask. And I later came to discover that other people had done this too, that I was not the only person thinking about this particular property. But that for whatever reason, Kenner, who had produced the Mask toys, and that's who has the license, which it was assumed by Hasbro. Hasbro now owns Kenner or whatever they were at the time, you know, all their licenses, intellectual properties, you know, they all that stuff was assumed by Hasbro. Hasbro has that Mask license now. So if you wanted to do this, if you wanted to do it legally anyway, you would. Did I lose you?
No, I'm listening. I'm just looking at some of these old Transformers magazines or comics because there's a couple of series that ran from Dreamwave Productions from 2002 to 2004.
Yeah, 2002. I think that's right about.
And then IDW Publishing started in 2005 with another one that ran through 06.
I had this big red thing come up on my Skype, and I thought I lost you. But it was just warning me that you're a commie.
Or was that your bloody nose?
It could have been. Could have been. But anyway, so yeah, I wrote this. Other people did too. There were people interested to find out how do we get the license from Hasbro if we were going to produce this. And, you know, upcoming here on the program, Clayton, as we've discussed, we're going to have Glenn Phillips from Toad the Wet Sprocket.
Yes, he will be here next week on the program.
That's right, a very special edition of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. We always get great guests in December. Remember last year we had Thomas Dolby in December.
That's right.
You know, I was kind of thinking about the nuts and bolts. You know, we often talk about the nuts and bolts of the music industry, and certainly that's something I'm looking forward to discussing with Glenn and with the comic book industry as well. If you were to go out and let's say you wanted to make this Mask comic or any of those old properties from Silverhawks to Sky Commanders, you'd pay the company that has it for the license, you know, whatever that might be, a one-year license, let's say, for you to produce that comic book within the 1 year. And then you would need to go out and find the writer. You'd need to go out and find the artists, the whole art team, a penciler, an inker, a colorist, or maybe somebody who's going to do all of that, and who's going to letter the book, who's going to print the book, who's going to distribute the book, how are you going to promote the book? You know, all those kinds of things go into the reality of putting a comic book on shelves and not losing a giant ton of money. And it just seemed like everyone that was kind of, you know, independently working on this, no one could figure out how to get the license from Hasbro. You know, like, yeah, you know, like, no one calls me back, or I don't know. Like, no one at Hasbro seems to know about this. I even talked to a couple comic book publishers about it that were in that milieu. Like, they were doing, right, you must be dealing with Hasbro because Transformers is their property. Like, who there can talk about Mask? And it was like, oh, we don't know. Nobody knows. So,
I guess you would find out as soon as you started maybe to do something with that name. We started, you know,
right.
Maybe you co-opted and started to publish something. You'd find out real fast.
Maybe, or maybe it's just not a priority for them, you know, and I don't know. In any regard, let me say this. If someone from that realm who knows anything about licensing is listening, I've been sitting on this script for a while, and I'd love to do something with it. And I'm pretty sure I know at least two really good artists that would join me on the project. But that's neither here nor there. But what I want to get to about all that is, you know, every once and again, I like to kind of check in. Like, has anything happened with that property? Because it seems like all the other 80s properties get some type of revival, except Mask. And as I was poking around, I discovered that in other, maybe even here in the U.S., there was like, after Mask ended, Kenner took those toys and like just painted them differently and made a whole new series out of them. Like, I think it's called Vortech. But it's just the Mask toys with like different colors, and sold it all over the world for like the next 3 years. So like, you know, they took like Gator and painted it green and called it something else. And there's this whole other, like, illegitimate Mask that somewhere in the world, that's the only thing people knew, right? Like, if you grew up with that instead of Mask, you'd think Mask was the knockoff. And I was, like, horrified by this.
That's so bizarre. Yeah, it's like it's entered some sort of weird vortex. Not, you know. It's like it's entered some weird black hole where no one... You know, you got to think. I mean, this is like an early 80s property. You come on to work for Hasbro, you're focused on other things, you're focused on other items. It's right, just like probably fallen in some filing cabinet that no one even remembers.
Yeah, you know, like, right. Like, when they acquire stuff like that, you know, like, oh, now we have all the Kenner stuff. Go put that in the back, in the filing cabinet. You know, like, we'll cherry pick out the couple things that we really like from Kenner and forget about the rest. Like, who wants to, you know, maintain that? You know, there's probably not somebody there who, like, oversees all these years later, right? They bought Kenner in the 90s. Like,
right.
It's not like, hey, who's in charge of the Kenner acquisition? Oh, that happened 10 years ago. So, yeah, it's always a little bit mystifying, that kind of stuff. But it's also fascinating to me, you know, all of that type of material about how those things actually get done. And certainly, we're looking forward to discussing maybe a little bit of that and tons of other stuff with Glenn Phillips from Toad the Wet Sprocket, who, as we said, will be joining us next week. Now, before we get to next week's episode, a couple things are going to happen, Clayton.
What's that, my friend?
One, later this week, you and I are going to see The Three Surviving Monkeys at the Keswick Theater in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which I'm super excited about, and I have gone out of my way to avoid seeing any spoilers about this whatsoever. There are tons of reviews out there on all the Monkees sites. I even saw the official Monkees site, like, released one of the full concert recordings. I don't know why on earth they did that, but I'm trying to avoid seeing any spoilers.
I haven't seen anything either. I've been avoiding it, too.
Yeah, like, I don't – if I read even one review, like, this is the worst concert ever. Like, I don't want to hear any of that. I want to experience it without any outside influence. That is coming up for us. Also, this weekend, Sunday, December 2nd, I will be wrestling at the Chikara season finale, which will be offered live on iPay-Per-View. If you can't join us at the Trocadero in Philadelphia, doesn't matter where you are on the planet, you can stream it live through smvod.com. For more information, like the full card, tickets, and pay-per-view ordering information, go to chikarapro.com.
And follow us on Twitter. We are Grizzly Bear Cafe on Twitter. Drop the egg out of it. If you have any questions you want to ask us, fire them away. We always try to read some of them. Mike's going to dig into the tweet archive right now to see if there's anything worth commenting on. Also, we have a Facebook page and a Google Plus page as well. You can check out some of the new stuff that we've been posting over there. And we always try to keep you up to date on what's Grizzworthy, you know. So we'll post up some interesting things in the comic book world, music, and other things as well. Hey, by the way, I've been downloading that Uncut magazine on my iPad. You know, you can, I think, a free couple of issues on your iPad in newsstand. After you mentioned Uncut magazine, that British music magazine, and it's very good. You are right. It is very good. I had, as a matter of fact, read an issue or two of this magazine a long time ago. So it stoked my memory when you mentioned that. So check that out on your iPad if you're into music and stuff. And we'll probably be commenting on a few articles out of that magazine as well. But first, I'm going to tell you about our good show sponsor, the folks over at Drobo. Because here's the deal, Mike. This computer that I have right now is a little long in the tooth. And I've begun to do a lot more with photo editing on my iMac, and it is painfully slow. It's painfully slow because it's like a 2009 machine, and it's using those spinning hard drives, and I have all my photos being backed up to an older Drobo. You know, I think it's like 4 years old now, this Drobo. Time to upgrade. Well, good thing, because Drobo, the folks at Drobo, have just redesigned from the ground up their storage solutions. And it fits every budget and every circumstance that you can think of. And I want to talk a little bit about some of the professional needs that you may have out there. I know we have a lot of listeners of this show who are work-at-home professionals, graphic designer types, web designers, those sorts of folks. And I know that a lot of you use Macintosh computers because I see the web traffic to our sites, and overwhelmingly you're on a Mac OS, which means that you need some place to store your data. And there's no better place to do it than a Drobo. So I'm going to talk about the Drobo 5D, which is the one that I want to get. So I'm going to get the brand new iMac in a few weeks. It's available in December. It's going to be super fast. And it's going to connect to this new Drobo 5D using Thunderbolt connections or a USB 3.0. And let me tell you, it is lightning fast. It's incredibly quiet. And now I can store all of my photos and videos. And I know, Mike, you shoot, you know, have a lot of videos for Chikara and other things that you handle and look at and deal with. What better place to store it than on a Drobo? That way you never have to worry about drive failure. And you can, with that speed, that can, you know, the Thunderbolt drive, the Thunderbolt cables and the USB 3.0, you can move this data very, very quickly. So if you're editing photos, you need access to that stuff quick. You don't want to sit there and wait 5 minutes. Like the other day, I got so frustrated. I was importing a whole bunch of photos I'd shot over Thanksgiving. It was like, I mean, I could have like gone to dinner, you know, and waited for this stuff to import. And it was painful. Absolutely painful. So I cannot wait to get this new iMac. I cannot wait to pick up a Drobo 5D that's going to be the companion. To me, they're going to go together like, butter and bread, right? Easy to use. The new Drobo 5D is fast. It's flexible. It's protected. It's exactly what's expected from Drobo. You can safely store and edit photos and videos as well as back up all of your personal data. So if one of the drives fails, you never have to worry about losing your data because it'll store it on those other drives. Anything else you want to add to that? You were thinking about getting a Drobo 5D as well, right?
Right, and for exactly the reason that you mentioned, because it's really designed for people like us, like people that are constantly dealing with all different multimedia, I've been kind of running the same Drobo I've had now for a number of years, and the Drobo I have, incidentally, maybe they all do this, I can watch right on the front, like how full mine is getting, and it's getting pretty full.
Right, right.
I'm going to need to expand pretty soon. And certainly that's the way to go, man, because they're just constantly improving. You know, they're always listening to feedback from their users and constantly improving on it. Every time they roll something out, you can just see it grows in leaps and bounds. And certainly the case with this newest line of Drobos.
And what's cool is it has a Drobo dashboard app for your computer. Whether you're using a PC like Mike is or a Mac, you get the Drobo dashboard software, and it can show you how full it is. And so you can see not only the lights on the front that show you how full it's getting, but obviously the Drobo dashboard software has a much more precise way of showing you. And then, you know, like Mike said, you can expand it. So you want to order another 3 terabyte drive, just jump over to Amazon, order another 1 terabyte drive, whatever you need. Pop out the old one, pop in a new one, and now you're expanded. And you'll notice those like little blue dots will decrease because you're like, now I've got more space to work with. It's pretty cool. So check it out. Go over to Drobo.com and check out the Drobo 5D. There's a video on there. There's, you can see, learn all about it. You can pair your Drobos. Maybe that's not the one for you. Maybe you need a Drobo Mini, Drobo S, Drobo Basic. Check it out at Drobo.com. We thank them so much for their support of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe.
Now, over in the old Twitter stream, I saw a couple of people were talking about Chris Hemsworth. They're talking about Thor from the Avengers and how thankful they were for him, just for him, for Chris Hemsworth. And he is in a new movie that just hit theaters called Red Dawn that is getting horrific reviews.
Okay, now, is it – I'm curious. I want to jump over to Rotten Tomatoes because –
21% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Now, this is one of those films from the 80s. Do you know that it's a remake, right?
I swear you and I have seen the original of this.
I don't know if you have. Maybe you and I have seen it together. It was one of my favorite 80s movies.
Right. I am really certain that we've watched the original together.
And I'm sure that it was on HBO at some point in our childhood, and you probably watched it at my house or something. But the original I loved. And the idea, of course, in the original Red Dawn, right, is that the small – from what I remember, because I haven't seen it in years, Patrick Swayze is in the original. Mm-hmm. And there's a small town that they sort of wake up one day and there's a bunch of troops in their town, you know, and you're like, what the heck's going on? They happen to be, I guess, a group of friends out in the forest, maybe on a camping trip, but they're out there with their guns doing shooting or something like that. And they notice as they're coming back that their town is being taken over by the Russians. Of course, you know, Cold War film, mid-80s. Yes, that's what it's going to be. And so what do? These group of like five or six individuals like create a bit of a militia. And they start doing like really what's the term in warfare? We certainly heard about it recently as it related to what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq, where terrorists would do not big attacks, but they would do sort of like mosquito-like attacks, you know, where they would come into it, you know, kind of what's the word I'm looking for? Nuisance, like nuisance attacks, that kind of thing.
Right. Okay.
So that's what they were basically doing, right? They go up to a Russian tank in their small town, and like one of the guys would like climb underneath it, and like put a Molotov cocktail on the tire tread to disable it, you know, that kind of stuff, right? Like A-team style stuff. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember how the movie ended. I think like they kind of held them off or something long enough for like the army to arrive and take them out. It was one of those deals, right? Obviously, these five individuals aren't going to take on the entire Red Army. Mm-hmm. So, but it was fun. I just remember thinking, man, if these people came into my town, I'm going to team up with Patrick Swayze and C. Thomas Howell, and I'm going to go out there in the forest. You know, Mike and I, you and I are going to go out and protect us, right? That's what we would have done in our hometown.
Of course.
You and
I
would have.
We were ready for that. We had been prepping for that for years.
With our smoke bombs and our fun snaps and our packs. Mm-hmm. We would have taken out the Russians.
Absolutely.
Now, this new one is – do you know the story on the new one?
No. I saw the reviews on Rotten Tomatoes and everything else that just seemed to say that this was dreadful. And the one reviewer – this made me very curious. He said, the story of how this even got made is more interesting than the movie itself.
And how is that?
Well, see, I don't know. That's what I was hoping you were about to tell me.
I don't know how it got made. I mean,
with cameras.
I mean, what I do know is that there – so I was watching the trailer, and I couldn't quite figure out like who – we live in a world – here's the problem, right? And you're right about this. It has an 11% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Wow.
Which
then,
is,
in the last 2 days then, it's dropped because it was 21% when I looked.
That's painful. Very painful. By the way, side note, my sister was here for the holidays, for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And she, you know, she's a big Batman fan. She likes superhero stuff too. And so she, I asked her, I said, you saw Dark Knight Rises, right? She said, oh yeah. And then I just started doing my Bane voice. I said, it's very painful for you. You know, and she got freaked out. She's like, no, stop, please. And she's like, and she was putting her hands over her ears. And I kept doing like all sorts of movie lines, you know, let's not stand on ceremony, Mr. Wayne. You know, I kept going on and on. And she was like, you sound exactly like him.
Exactly.
Stop it. Right. And I'm like, I got very flattered by that. I don't know if she just couldn't hear me across the room and I was doing, you know, but she's like, no, he's like one of the creepiest villains I've ever seen. Creepiest voice, creepiest villain. Stop doing it. She kept getting like weirded out by it. So
do you think that ventilator and voice modulator that you wear over your mouth maybe contributed to why I sounded that way?
And you thought you'd bring him to me. Good people of Gotham. So I kept doing that to her the whole weekend. She was getting freaked out. So now I've got – she shouldn't have told me that because now I'll like leave her voicemail messages. Be like,
right.
Are you there? Anyway, back to Red Dawn. So now the new – yes, Chris Hemsworth is the lead character in the new Red Dawn. Mm-hmm. Josh Hutcherson, Isabel Lucas, and Josh Peck are also in this film. Now, and I was watching the trailer and I couldn't – here's what I was going to say is in this new world we live in, we live in sort of a – we don't – there are very few superpowers in the world anymore, right? There's the United States and arguably China, but even China doesn't have much of a sea presence. So really, there's like
China.
There's like one, although they just built an aircraft carrier and they have been starting to build their own jets instead of getting
one
from the Russians.
You've got one,
but times have changed, right? So the sort of modern world we are now, all the shows like Homeland, the shows that are interesting have to do with terrorism. Mm-hmm. They have to do with these sort of small-scale terrorist attacks under the cover of darkness. No home state. Like, we don't know – no nation state, I should say, right? Al-Qaeda doesn't have a nation. They're in Yemen. They're in Syria. They're in Afghanistan. They're in Pakistan. And so we don't have, like, one nation to worry about like we did in the 80s, a la, the USSR. Mm-hmm. And so now it was hard for me to tell in the trailer, but I did see like he looked moderately Chinese. Like he didn't look like straight up Jackie Chan. Like he looked mm-hmm. like he was like his mom was from Indiana,
mm-hmm.
white, and then his father must have been from China. You know what I mean? He had like...
Well, they're supposed to be Korean, right? The antagonists in the remake aren't Russian. They're Korean.
Well, I couldn't even tell because they never had a tight shot of the bad guy. It was all this mm-hmm. like wide shot. And I'm like, are they trying to make it out that China invades us now? Which would mm-hmm. make... That would be like the only country I would believe would invade us.
I believe it's supposed to be like crazy North Koreans invade Seattle. I believe that's what this new one is supposed to be.
Okay. All right. Yeah, then I guess that makes sense. So it's
where do you want to start taking them over? What's closest? Get me to get a globe out. Go to this one here in the corner, Seattle.
So I want to see what the 1984 version got. 1984 had 53%.
Hey, look up I'm really just curious here because this is one of Clayton's other favorite childhood films. Look up Real Genius.
Oh yeah.
What do you think Real Genius has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I'm gonna guess before I type it in here. I'm gonna say 65%. Mm-hmm. Let's see here. Real Genius. Ooh, I'm wrong. 74%. Interesting. I love that film. Yeah. You know, if you ever watch Real Genius, there's a whole scene that makes no sense to me in it that I think. I mean, it's so bizarre, right? There's that they're playing some funky 80s, and I've long tried to get this soundtrack.
Mm.
I've long tried to find it because it's impossible to find, and I've long tried to dig it up. There's some songs on there that you've never heard before, that you probably never hear again. I don't know where the soundtrack is. If anyone knows where to find this thing, I think I've done a search for it a number of times. Unless they've somehow licensed it and it's now available on iTunes, and I haven't checked in a while. But anyway, there's this one scene where I don't know. Have you seen the film?
Just chunks of it that I've watched with you. I've never watched it independent of that. You know, I'd come over and I'd be like, hey, you know, we're supposed to be somewhere. And you're like, there's only 45 minutes of Real Genius left. Sit down.
Right. There's a scene where Mitch is in school and he's just like now he's instead of fooling around, he's like focusing on his schoolwork. And it's a whole montage of him doing schoolwork and like going to class and other things. But there's all these scenes where he's like interacting and having discussions like in a classroom with somebody else, like the teacher's talking to him and he's responding.
Mm-hmm.
But the whole time they're just playing music over it.
Mm-hmm.
They're not allowing you to hear it at all.
Right. Yeah, you get the gist.
And I'm like, did the director just feel like maybe they just had like bad audio and they just didn't feel like recutting it? But it's like this goes on for like 3 minutes of him like around campus talking to people. Like presumably there are plot points being discussed here.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, then the music sort of fades out after a while. But I'm like, there was nothing. It wasn't like him playing tennis or working out or anything like, or like making a bomb, you know, like where you'd have like some sort of genius montage. No, he's like talking to people and you can't hear a word of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the scenes don't make sense when he's talking, like he's talking back and forth to the teacher. And then, you know, Val Kilmer comes in at one point with an apple and he puts it on the desk and he sits down and then like they cut away and then the teacher throws out the apple and like there's no point to it.
I don't recall that. I don't. But it would be fun to go back and rewatch that. I was thinking about this the other day as on shuffle mode on my iPod. One of the underappreciated bits of genius from Weird Al Yankovic came on. There's a song of his called Party at the Leper Colony, which every time that comes on, which it doesn't come on very often, I laugh. I laugh out loud. Like, it is ingenious, that song. And I thought, I haven't watched UHF in so long. And that for years and years was like my favorite movie. I just thought UHF was like the funniest thing ever. Even just thinking about some of the scenes like Conan the Librarian, like where he cuts the kid in half that has the late right. library book, or Gandhi 2.
Wheel of like, Fish.
Oh, God. Like, I just think about some of the scenes in that movie and I just crack up and like, I haven't watched that in forever. And that's got a great cast of like awesome supporting players. Michael Richards is Stanley Spadowski and Victoria Jackson, who's a frequent Weird Al collaborator, is in there, you know, not long, I think, after her SNL run. And I really kind of miss UHF. I would like to sit down and watch that. And I did have an opportunity to take in a film. I saw a movie that I have to admit, I was a little confused because I thought this had something to do with owls, and it doesn't. It's called Rise of the Guardians. And
yeah, it's an animated show, right?
Yeah, it is animated, and it's like that Polar Express type animation, you know? But I could have sworn there was just a movie with Guardians in the title that were like about owls, and that this was like maybe the sequel. Like the first one was like Night of the Guardians, and this one's like Rise of the Guardians. So I thought, oh, those owls must be in this. The owls have nothing to do with this movie. There are no owls in Rise of the Guardians, Clayton.
There was an owls movie called Legend of the Guardians.
There you go. I assumed this was like a continuation of the owl franchise because, you know, like those are just the number. That's what kids want, Clayton. They want owls.
So you saw this with your son?
Oh, no. I just went by myself.
Of the other films that are out there right now, this is the one you chose.
Right, yeah. About 30 minutes into it, he turned to us and he's just like, I just want to go home.
Wow.
To summarize it very, very briefly for you, and it has a decent rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and it's perfectly acceptable, I guess. It's basically like they made an Avengers movie for kids. And it's Santa Claus, the Easter Bunny, the Sandman, the Tooth Fairy, and newest member of the team, Jack Frost.
Is he the bad guy?
No. The bad guy is the Boogeyman, and I thought, you know the actor that plays Loki, Tom Hiddleston?
Right.
I thought it was him voicing. Like, this guy is so Loki, it's not even funny. It's actually Jude Law doing his voice.
Yeah.
But as I'm listening to it, I'm like, oh my God, they even got Loki to do the voice of this Loki-like villain. It really is. Like, it's one, once you get that stuck in your brain, like, they just made an animated Avengers movie with, like, these folklore characters for kids. It's clearly, absolutely what this thing is. Having said that, it's perfectly acceptable, and I think most children would enjoy it, and you don't hate it as a grown-up. You know, it's perfectly fine. It's actually, at points, it exhibits a decent amount of imagination and creativity to it, but nevertheless,
Chris Pine does Jack Frost's voice. Chris Pine, who plays Captain Kirk Star Trek show.
Hugh Jackman is the Easter Bunny. Alec Baldwin does a great job as Santa Claus. You'd never even know it's him.
Which always makes me curious why they choose and spend this amount of money on a big name actor. I mean, it's a kids movie. Kids don't care that that's Alec Baldwin's voice. I mean, do they only do it because the parents care?
Right, and do you? Like, kid's like, take me to see the guard. I want to see what the owls are up to. You're like, I guess we're going. Oh, listen, son. Unless some top-name actors are doing the voice work, we are not spending $12 on this movie. Let's see. Oh, Alec Baldwin.
Well, like my son and I, we did a little boys' night out the other night. We went to see the other animated movie out right now, Wreck-It Ralph, which I think has like 93% on Rotten Tomatoes right now. Wreck-It Ralph from Disney. And you're right. I mean, there's a lot of actors in that are obviously very popular. And Sarah Silverman plays like the female protagonist and so forth. But I didn't care. I mean, it would have just been – I just would have enjoyed – John C. Reilly plays Ralph, Wreck-It Ralph. But again, I don't really care who's doing the voice. Jane Lynch did a great job, though, as Sergeant Calhoun. Ed O'Neill had some funny moments in there. And Jack McBriar from
30 Rock.
30 Rock plays Fix-It Felix in the game. In the video, in the movie. So it was very good. And he enjoyed the whole movie. So I don't know. That movie had a lot for parents in it, regardless, because it wasn't just like the voices. It was all about like this 80s video game stuff that as adults, it was a brilliant, you know, play because you have like Q-Bert in it at one point. Like Q-Bert's like out of work. Like he's like unemployed, and like the snake from Q-Bert, they're all like begging for money inside of Grand Game Central or Central Game Station or whatever, where all of the games intersect and they all kind of meet up and hang out. So their game got unplugged, so Q-Bert's now unemployed, and Wreck-It Ralph goes by and sees him, and he talks Q-Bertese to him once in a while. You got Sonic in there. You've got some of the great villains from like Tekken and Street Fighter.
Right. I saw M. Bison in one of the trailers, and I was like, wow, that's really odd. But probably only Disney has the deep pockets to realize something like that because, what a nightmare it must have been to license all those characters from all the different video game publishers.
Right, and I was actually really surprised because there were quite a few Nintendo references mm-hmm. in there. There was the, you know, he goes to like an AA style meeting for bad guys at the beginning mm-hmm. of the movie, Wreck-It Ralph does. And so he's sitting right. there and called Bad Anon is the name of the meeting. And so you've got like a zombie, you've got one of the guys from Tekken in there, Street Fighter bad guys. Then you've got the dinosaur. What's the dinosaur's name from Super Mario Brothers? Bowser?
Oh, I don't know, but you might be right.
He's sitting there right next to him. And then you've mm-hmm. got a couple of, like, some of the mushrooms and Koopa mm-hmm. Troopas and other things from Nintendo lore and literature and stuff. And I thought, my God, how did they get the rights to this? But then I was thinking about this, and this has been, honestly, a little techie here for a moment, but the Nintendo Wii U launched this week.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the only new console available during the holidays, right? The Xbox 360 has been out for a few years, but still going right. strong, you know, but almost really no reason to revitalize it. You can play DVDs in there. You can have Netflix. You can play 1080p video games and high definition, and it's great. Like, why do you need to upgrade it right now? You don't, you know? Well, the Wii wasn't ever in high definition. And it sort of was really long in the tooth. I think it's like 5 years old, 6 years old now for a console. So Nintendo's the only company, not even Sony, that's out with a new console this year. And a lot of people wondering, like, what the hell it is? Like, mm-hmm. I've gotten it, and I'm just starting to play with it and test it. And, you know, it's interesting, and I think there's some interesting Nintendo products and games in there that'll be cool. Like, there's Batman Armored Edition.
Mm.
And so you're holding this gamepad in your hand that has a screen. It has an LCD screen in your face.
Right.
And some of the reviews I've read show that it's a little confusing. You're not sure which screen to look at, the one right. you're, you know, in front of or the one that's in your hand. And it'd be great for maybe maps, like using Arkham City and have like a map in your hand so you can glance down at the map and not have to pull up a separate menu screen. And those sorts of things make sense. But it's just an odd thing. And it was a great piece in the Times this week about Nintendo and the future of Nintendo. I mean, it's been the powerhouse, right, for years. And Nintendo has been hard-headed in that they haven't been willing to license out their games anywhere else. It's only mm-hmm. Nintendo, right? You've got the Nintendo lock-in problem. So you have to buy one of their consoles to play Super Mario Brothers or Kid Icarus or Metroid or any of the characters that they've made famous you have to pay for on a Nintendo platform, which has been mm-hmm. great up until now. Now that everyone has a smartphone and Sega has been very smart, right? They've licensed their games to Apple.
Mm-hmm.
And other places. So I can download Sonic on my iPhone. And Sega has made millions of dollars off of doing that.
Mm-hmm.
So why not, right? You've got these properties. If people have these platforms that they want to play it on, but the Nintendo's just being like hard-headed about it. And it's like, no, if you want to play Mario, you got to buy a Nintendo Wii U. You know, it's the only mm-hmm. way you're going to be able to play it. Well, good luck for them, because I think it's going to be an unmitigated disaster this holiday season. I'll be surprised if it does well at all. And one guy cited in the article was saying that they were doing some tests on these kids and how they were playing. And he has like a 60-inch flat screen with a number of game consoles all set up in the house. And the adults would want to play it, but they go into the room and the kids are sitting there in front of an iPhone or a smartphone playing Temple Run.
Mm.
So they're not even playing like these console games anymore. So anyway, my point is that if there's one company that Disney should buy, it should be Nintendo. Mm. You know, Disney has a knack for buying these other companies, right? Like Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
They buy and they acquire these companies that have deep intellectual property and characters that are sort of timeless. And I was thinking about it. They bought Marvel. Who did they just buy like last week?
Lucasfilm?
Yeah. Lucasfilm. There you go. So they've got like a large archive of characters from from Lucasfilm.
There are a few characters in that universe.
And the only other company that I can think of that's out there like that that is ripe for acquiring mm-hmm. Would be Nintendo. So if Disney mm-hmm. could buy Nintendo, think of the marketing stuff. I mean, they buy family-friendly stuff, right? Characters and Mario and all that stuff that they could put in their theme parks or, you know, even just bring over to, you know, Apple and be able to do stuff on iOS devices and Android devices and things like that. So I don't know. I just think that I couldn't help but thinking that while I was watching that movie.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly understand that. Hey, one other thing that we got a tweet about, and once again, we're at Grizzly Bear Cafe. That's probably the easiest way to reach us, if you can contain your thoughts to, what, 140 characters, is that right?
Yep.
So mention us, and we'll see it. It comes up in our stream, as they call it, at Grizzly Bear Cafe. Jason Hackett wrote to us, Clayton. You remember Jason, of course.
Mm-hmm.
The three of us, we used to play football together, three-man football.
That's right.
That's what we used to do, despite the fact that he doesn't live anywhere near us. He wrote this, I think, not realizing. He wrote this to us. What is it with Reading, PA, and the monkeys? Two unrelated podcasts, the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe and Comic Geek Speak, both from Reading, PA, are obsessing about them. Well, we are not entirely unrelated. In fact, the guys that were originally behind Comic Geek Speak, and I don't know who's behind it now, I don't pay any attention to that, but when they launched, the guys that were Comic Geek Speak were the same guys that had worked on a direct-to-video superhero project with me back in the year 2000 called Crusaders LTD.
Hmm.
When the group sort of fragmented, they became the Comic Geek Speak guys. And in fact, I think they've even referenced it probably, given that their show is almost entirely about comicdom. Apparently not, though, if they're talking about the monkeys. I'm sure that's probably come up there. So we are not entirely unrelated. We're actually quite familiar with one another, are we? Even though I haven't seen or spoken to those guys in many, many years. Comes up, it's often misstated. Like, I think even on my Wikipedia page, it's not entirely right. But it was a very, very short-lived, but incredibly exhausting and frustrating process was the creation of this thing, which we had meant to launch at the summer of 2000's Chicago Comic Con, which at the time was second only to San Diego. Things have shifted a little bit in the last 12 years. But at the time, that was second only to San Diego. And it was an enormous flop. To summarize it quite briefly, it was an enormous flop, and it was probably the single most frustrating project I've ever been involved in as a creative endeavor in my entire life. And that's about all there is to say about that.
Hmm. Hey, I want to mention this real quick before we thank one of our show sponsors, but I just realized that Drobo is doing a big, big giveaway this month,
mm-hmm.
All through December. Every week they're giving away a Drobo 5D. And,
wow.
and a Drobo Mini. Mm-hmm. I'm going to tweet out the link for you guys, but just go over to their website and click on the giveaway. It's a big link right on the front. All you do is you put in your first name, last name, and email, and you hit submit, and they will contact you if you win. Every week they're doing a Drobo Mini and a Drobo 5D giveaway chance. I'm gonna enter my name.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I thought I'd mention that. But Mike is going to take a moment here and thank one of our other show sponsors, our good friends at Cobra, makers of the Cobra Vedetta system.
Right.
Perfect holiday gift.
Yes. I wasn't sure if you were about to say something else there. Absolutely it is. There's a world of awesome holiday gifts for really anybody. Like, we always like to kind of say, oh, the person that loves gadgets. But you know what? That's not necessarily the case with Cobra. These are gifts for everyone. I always kind of think of them as being great for people that travel a lot. If you spend a lot of time in the car, on the road, on the go, they've got all kinds of great stuff for you. And if I haven't hammered this home before, I want to take a moment and do this right now, because they've got, I want to say, at least 30 items that are on deep discount, and a lot of them are buy one, get one free. So you can get something cool for somebody else and keep one for yourself. It's like it's Christmas for everybody. Right? It's the season for getting one free when you buy one. I think that's how they market it. When you go over to Cobra.com, on their left-hand navigation, you'll see it says Our Products Categories. And down that list is Specials, and that's where you want to go. Dig around in there and just take a look at all the different items, from radar detectors, even simple things like mounts for your car, and the much-talked-about and beloved Cobra Eye Radar System, which now, not only have the price has been slashed a few times throughout the year, and now they're even offering it with free shipping. It doesn't get any better than this. And I think the reason for that, actually, is because the Cobra Vedetta system that Clayton alluded to is really kind of taking the industry by storm. It is setting a brand new standard for that in radar detection, laser and red light camera detection, the whole nine yards. The Vedetta is really the ultimate. Now, if you want to find out, like, well, what's the difference, or what's this thing like? You know, how does it really work? One of the great things that Cobra.com has done is they make little demo videos for all of their best products. So if you find that page on there, oh, I want to know more about the, let's say, the Cobra Eye Radar System, well, you can watch the 3-minute demo video that shows you exactly what it does. That way you never get one of these things, you know, you spend some money on this and it shows up at your house and you're like, ah, this doesn't really do what I thought it would do. Or, ah, you know, I thought this was one thing and it was really something else. You're never going to have that issue. Check out our great show sponsors, Cobra.com. Make sure you visit the special section right now, where they're still offering all these tremendous discounts on their most popular selling items so that you can stock up for the holidays. both for somebody else and for yourself. And of course, for I think it's yeah, it might be for you. It's certainly worthy of note here. They have been long-standing supporters of us here, not only at the Grizz, but also on a parenting podcast that I do called Daddy on Board, which is also on the network. They allow us to create this content for you free every week. You've never had to pay for an episode of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. You've never had to pay for a Daddy on Board. And so long as we have great sponsors like Cobra, you won't. So if for no other reason than because you love the podcasting content that we deliver to you, take a few minutes, go over to Cobra.com today and look around their site and see what they have to offer. I guarantee you, there's something on that site for someone on your shopping list if you just take a moment to browse around a bit. And both Clayton and I would thank you if you do, much like we thank Cobra.com for their long-standing support of Grizzly Productions.
Indeed, and I'm just tweeting out from our account right now. If you want to win a brand new Drobo, of course you do. They are available to enter, and we'll send out that link so you can go over and enter and try to win a Drobo. Be great for you. Yeah, and you know what? We don't ask this, and maybe you know, we'll maybe ask this again over the holidays, but please, 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 it helps us tremendously. It's very simple to do. If you haven't done it, or if you haven't done it in a long time, go to iTunes and just give us a nice review, a nice little 5-star review, and just type a sentence or two in there for the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. It really helps us. It helps new people discover the show. And next week, of course, we're bringing you Glenn Phillips from Toad the Wet Sprocket. And Apple is going to be doing a nice promotion for us there. We're going to be putting up some of Toad the Wet Sprocket's albums associated with the show. So you may, in fact, see us on the front page of iTunes next week. Very exciting.
Mm.
Just a hint, hint, wink, wink. So go there and do that. It'll really help us new folks find the show, like-minded folks who love comics, who love movies, who love music, who love coffee, kibitzing, and complaining. This is your home.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of movies, can I talk a little bit about Skyfall?
Right. Yeah, well, I thought the Razor thing was about it. Is there more to that movie?
Yeah, there's much more to that movie. Are you planning on seeing it? I assume you will. You're a Bond fan, right?
Not so much. I sort of am by association by virtue of being your friend.
Yeah. And I wouldn't claim, you know, there are Bond freaks. I am not one of them.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, I enjoy a Bond film. I was never really a Bond fan until the Daniel Craig films.
Right. I hate Timothy Dalton. Like, mm-hmm. I don't know what it is about that dude. I just see his face and I want to punch him.
Yeah.
So, because that was who was James Bond when I first started going to the movies. Like, I've always had kind of like an aversion to James Bond, because to me, yeah, I know he only did, what, 2 films, right?
Right.
He did Living Daylights, and he did one other one, and then they got rid of Timothy Dalton.
Is that it? Like, that's all that he did?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure 2 was it, and then, you know, they replaced him with Pierce Brosnan.
Yeah, 1987, you're right, The Living Daylights. Did he only do one?
I think. Oh, is it just one?
Because I thought only...
I thought he did 2.
I think you're right. I mean, because I only thought George Lazenby was the only one who did one Bond film.
Right. I swear there's a second Timothy Dalton James Bond, but I could be wrong. Because
no, License to Kill, and then what's the other
Daylights.
One? And The Living Daylights. Those right. 2. 1987, 1989.
Right.
But I'm sure that I saw them. I don't remember them. Mm-hmm. The Living Daylights, 1987. License to Kill, 1989.
There's one where the opening, the cold open, before like the Bond theme and the opening credits roll, is him like escaping in a cello case down a mountain from like slalom skiers with machine guns.
That's right. That's arguably one of the most ridiculous openings of any Bond film.
Like, and that was my introduction to James Bond. That's how I met him. And I was
just
you're like,
right. That's why I was never a fan. I think because you and I grew up, we looked at these crappy Bond movies, right? And then you had the Pierce Brosnan ones, which were sort of equally bad.
Right. I like Pierce Brosnan just fine, but like, I wasn't into those.
Yeah. And neither was I. So I am not a huge Bond fan until the new Casino Royale came out with Daniel Craig.
Right. Which was excellent.
Yeah. Which is an excellent film. And it wasn't over the top. You had a great. I think at the beginning of that movie, that's when you had the chase scene, right? Towards the embassy, I think. And he's up on the cranes and all of that, if I'm not mistaken. Or was that Quantum of Solace?
Mm.
You know, he goes to the embassy, and the guy should have been safe at the embassy, but he just jumps over the wall into the embassy and kicks the crap out of the guy anyway.
Oh, no, that's Casino Royale.
Yeah. But a large part of the film is just in the casino, right? It's just him dealing with, like, having to play against what's his name? The Sheik?
Right, whoever that is.
With the scar and the missing eye or whatever, who was great. And so it's very understated. You know, a lot of the tension and drama and thrills come from him at the poker table, you know. which was great. So anyway, I became a fan of the Bond, I guess, for the first time, really, because of the Daniel Craig films. And Quantum of Solace was not very good. It was okay. But the new one, Skyfall, is excellent. Excellent, excellent. And, you know, it has a lot to do with the director, Sam Mendes, who is a favorite of mine and who, of course, won the Academy Award for directing American Beauty. And he is a master. And every scene, I'll say this about him, every scene is a work of art. Every scene is shot and directed with such care and precision and beauty that it makes you want to see it again. I want to go see it a third time. There are scenes where he's in Shanghai. Every scene is like a set piece. He's in Shanghai going after this guy at one point up in a high-rise, all-glass building at night. So as my wife remarked, this must have been a nightmare to shoot, right? Because he's up on this high floor, all the windows facing out to Shanghai, which is filled with like neon lights aplenty. He's going after this guy. It's very reminiscent of Enter the Dragon, where Bruce Lee at the end is entering that one area with all the mirrors. You know what I'm talking about?
Enter the Dragon. That's one of my favorite romantic comedies.
And the guy that has the claws, like the Wolverine claws. Mm-hmm. On, remember, he's going in all the mirrors at the end.
Well, that was Meg Ryan, right?
Mm-hmm. And she just sent him a thing and said, "You've got mail."
Mm-hmm.
So he showed up. So and he's in this really beautifully lit scene with like reflections on all these mirrors, and he's trying to go, you know, get this guy who's about to do something bad. And mm-hmm. such care as these reflections are hitting these windows as he's sneaking through to sneak up on the guy, and just gorgeous, you know. Sound editing is perfect. Then you go from that to later the night in Shanghai at this bar on the water where there's all these dragons involved, actual living dragons that are as part of this bar. Like you'd walk across this little bridge and you'd glance down at these poisonous dragons, and you'd, you know, with all these like little tea lights and beautiful lantern lights and everything. It's just gorgeous and beautifully shot. And it's such attention to detail from that to the ending of the film, where there's this massive, it's nighttime and it's all lit by firelight. Gorgeous. And there's quite a bit of, it has a sense of humor about it as well. There's quite a bit of throwback to some of the earlier Bond films. But it's also safely in its own place as a modern-day Bond, right? He doesn't have to say, "I'll take a martini, shaken, not stirred," whatever. He just – there's a bartender at one point shaking his martini and pours it into this frosted glass. And it's like tight shot on this frosted glass where it just begins to dissipate and crystallize. And he just looks up at her and just says, "Perfect." Like he doesn't have to ask for it, shaken, not stirred. Mm-hmm. Presume he already asked for it and she's pouring it for him and he just says, "Perfect." There are a couple of other, you know, winks to the past, but then it's also firmly modern, like the new Q, right? He's not this old guy with like gray hair who's like giving him these weird gadgets anymore. He's like a kid. He's like 21 years old and he's like a computer genius, mm-hmm. which makes a lot of sense if you think
right.
about
and
it.
He's featured in the trailer quite a bit. Like they kind of hint at like a competitive rivalry.
Right, like he's the old school agent who pulls the trigger, and here's the guy who never leaves his house in his pajamas, who's the genius computer hacker, you know. Mm-hmm. But it makes sense. I mean, that's the world we live in, right? So you wouldn't have this old British white haired guy who's like the computer genius anymore, you know, building gadgets for you.
Right, but I do believe John Cleese does really make cufflinks with stun darts in them.
So there are a few moments like that where he's asking him for, he's like, "That's it?" Like he just hands him like a radio, you know, and that's all he gets. And he's like, mm-hmm. "That's it?" He's like, "You know, we don't really go for those exploding pens anymore," you know, mm-hmm. and there's a, and then of course, Judi Dench is fantastic. You know, she's mm-hmm. the curmudgeon, who plays M, just great. So Javier Bardem is fantastic. Quite a twist to his character, quite a few twists to his character actually. But he plays it with such precision. You're just wrapped with him, with the attention that he takes up on the screen. You can't look away from him. He's so compelling. So all around, just an excellent film. Every scene shot so beautifully with such care. I would highly recommend it. I can't wait to see it again. And quite a great action film too. I mean, it's, you know.
Well, there's some action in the James Bond movie.
Yeah, I mean, and some great set pieces for that. But it's really this sort of human interaction and the dialogue that's maybe even more compelling than some of the action sequences.
Mm-hmm. I saw a lot of great reviews for Daniel Craig's bottom lip. They said it's jutting out just enough.
Remember a lot of people picked on him as a choice. Remember that when you were like,
sure,
a blonde Daniel Craig?
Mm-hmm. Isn't there some other guy named Daniel Craig with different color hair
that we could get?
Why the blonde Daniel Craig? This is a terrible idea. Yeah. Well, I'm glad that you enjoyed Skyfall, and I suspect in a matter of days, no matter what it sounds like, you and I will enjoy The Monkees at the Keswick Theater. I'm very much looking forward to that. And as Clayton mentioned, please keep your eyes out, because I suspect our friends over at Apple, you remember, of course, I think it was just a week ago, Clayton told us they merged with Walmart. They're now known as Apple Walmart. They will be doing a little bit of promotion for us as well, as Glenn Phillips, frontman of Toad the Wet Sprocket, joins us on the forthcoming Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe. In between then and now, of course, as I mentioned, I'll be over on Daddy on Board. I'll be on the trending show with this chick, Natalie. Clayton, do you know her?
I met her.
Yeah. And, of course, Chikara's season finale, iPay-Per-View, Under the Hood. Clayton, who gets no days off, ever, appears on Fox and Friends on the Fox News Network. I want to point out, he does not appear on Fox and Friends First. That low-rated program, Clayton, I think it's safe to say, if you were on that program, the numbers would triple. You are a ratings mover.
That's right.
That's what they call you in the news biz.
When I show up, the ratings come after.
Mm-hmm. Do you have anything upcoming that you can talk about? I know usually these things are kept under embargo. Is there anything upcoming on this weekend's Fox and Friends that you can let us in on a little bit of a secret?
God, I just went through all the Thanksgiving Fox and Friends, so I can't even think what would be coming up. You know, I'm going to be doing a whole bunch of gadget segments, best gadgets for fathers, best gadgets for moms, best gadgets for kids. I'm going to be doing those over the next few weeks. I'm culling my list right now. Some good stuff I'm going to be showing off on the show. And if you guys want to peek at the Nintendo Wii U, I'll probably have that on the show as well and some other things. So follow me there. Check out my photography blog. I've been having a lot of fun with that over at Photography Begins. I just posted up a little tip and trick on how to do indoor flash photography on portrait photos so that you don't get that blown out look on the face, like if you're taking some photos of your kids and stuff like that. So check that out, photographybegins.com. I'm having a lot of fun doing that blog.
That's about it. That is enough grizzing for one day, kids. We'll be back in about a week.
Bye-bye.
Adios. Yeah!